The shiur today is, I think, a little bittersweet, because in Parshat Toldot, we meet for the first time a pair that their relationship resonates throughout history, and it's a difficult relationship, and it is a relationship that, according to our tradition, continues to not just resonate, but reverberate in very active ways throughout history. And that's, of course, Yaakov and Esav, and it all starts there. And the reason that this is bittersweet, I love talking about Yaakov and Esau, the reason it's bittersweet is because today is really like an abridged version of a shiur that I gave 2 years ago in Chicago for a dear friend of ours, Caleb Mayer, who at the time was successfully battling cancer. His first Yahrzeit is coming up in a few weeks. And so I wanted to do this both in Caleb's memory. Caleb is a very heroic young man who was an inspiration to everybody who knew him, and whose smile will never be forgotten. But Caleb finally succumbed to the cancer approximately a year ago, a little less than a year ago. But the shiur is still a timeless shiur. And so I wanted to do that. That shiur was an hour long and was actually part of a longer series, but I wanted to do this particular part because the piece that happens in three segments in our parsha, the first is the nevuah, which is the big print on the page. The second is the whole story of the lentils, etc. And the third is, of course, the real big one, which is the theft of the bracha and Yaakov having to run away as a result, really set certain patterns, are part of a pattern, and set certain patterns for Jewish history. So let's take a look at it. We're going to start with source 4. We'll go back to sources 1, 2, and 3. By the way, all the sources 1 through 8 are reproduced in English on the back, so you can easily reference them back and forth. But the key nevuah, so what happens is Rivka marries Yitzchak. They're barren for 20 years. And then after 20 years, finally she gets pregnant. She's confused by the pregnancy. And the simplest explanation is because she's far away from home. She has no one to talk to. What's it like to be pregnant? And she doesn't understand what twins are like. And she doesn't know she has twins. And so she's confused. So she goes to seek out God, whatever that may mean. Most Rishonim say that means she went to a Navi. Maybe she herself prayed. And what's God's answer? Vayomer Adonai la, shnei goyim bevitnech, u'shnei leumim mimeayich yiparedu, u'om mil'om yamatz, v'rav yavod sa'ir. Now, this is not just flowery poetry. Each phrase, and that's why I broke it up the way I did, each phrase is a prophetic phrase with not just a different, but an additional meaning. In other words, you look at each phrase, and it tells you something, and the next phrase says that plus. So the first thing is she thinks she's pregnant. She doesn't know what's going on. So the first news is Shnei Goyim Bevitnech, which carries with it two pieces of news. What are the two pieces of news? A, you have twins. You didn't know you had twins. But the second thing is you don't just have twins. Who do you have inside of you? Two nations. Now, what does it mean, two nations? On the one hand, that's really good news. It means that I have two sons. We've definitely got to get patristic about it. And two sons. And each one of them is going to be the head of a nation. That's pretty impressive. On the other hand, that could be a little bit of bad news, because it means that they're not going to be one family. But okay, two nations, very powerful, it's nice. Look, Menashe and Ephraim are two nations. And that's not such a bad thing. Ushnei le'umim. Now, the word le'um, as opposed to goy, may refer more to an ethnic or a cultural identity as opposed to a political one. But in any case, it also may be a synonym.
Yes.
Yeah? Hold on a second. Mi me'ayich yiparedu. What does that mean? Mi me'ayich yiparedu. They will separate from your womb. Doesn't mean they will separate away from your womb. It means as soon as they come out of the womb, they'll separate. Meaning, it's not just that you have two nations that will operate together, like, let's say, Menashe and Ephraim, who once in a while mix it up, but for the most part work together, we like to think. And it's not just that it's two nations two kids are going to grow up together, and they're going to be very, very friendly, but their great-great-grandchildren will have some sort of break. The break will happen as soon as they're born. which is a pretty powerful statement. Ul'om mil'om yamatz. Now back to the word l'om, which means that the two will struggle against each other, which now means a third step. Not just that they're going to be two nations which are distinct, not just that they're going to separate and are going to separate from the get-go, but also that they're going to be in constant confrontation with each other. Meaning it won't be like they'll separate and go their separate ways. They're going to separate and they're going to confront each other. And that confrontation will be constant. We see from the last line, which is V'rav Yavod Sa'ir. Now, how would you translate Rav Yavod Sa'ir? The older one? What? Will serve the younger, or the older one will work the younger. There's a deliberate ambiguity here. All right? So we're going to have to see what this is. Jason, you had a question.
The idea of nation building, be familiar with her?
I'm not sure what nation building means.
Well,
but
the idea of two goyim.
Everybody knows what a nation is. Well, everybody knows what a nation is.
I don't mean like that. It's like you're a mother, you're having a family, you don't think of
right. So this is
nations.
No, this is clearly a huge prophecy. She's not looking necessarily at like she's going to have a kid born with 50,000 soldiers coming out right in back of him, and another kid with another 50,000. Anybody would understand this means down the line, but there's nations surrounding her, and these nations are all named after somebody. There's a nation called Canaan. They're named after a guy named Canaan. Yeah, Harold.
Now you're translating Rav to mean older.
Well, only because what's Sa'ir?
Yeah, Sa'ir is younger, but
right.
Rav means quantity, right?
It can mean quantity. Rav also could mean like master, right? But when juxtaposed or in opposition to Sa'ir, it seems to mean older, right? Okay, so this is the prophecy, and we hear about how this prophecy is realized immediately. Meaning, she's given this prophecy, and the very next pasuk already goes to the birth. And at the birth, what do we hear? So in passage 5, Vayetzei Rishon Admoni Kulo Kader Tseyar. The first one comes out ruddy. By the way, he's not the only famous ruddy person in Tanakh. Who else is ruddy? Who else is Admoni? David. By the way, David and Esav have a lot of things in common. All right? Would it surprise you to find that David's first army was made up of 400 men? What's the very famous scene in Vayishlach? There comes Esav with his 400 men. All right? Is David, some would like to say he's the tikkun for Esav? Maybe not. Maybe Esav is not the bad guy that we make him out to be later on in Tanakh and Midrash, at least not in Bereshit. But in any case, he's Admoni Kulo Kaderet Seyar. He's like a He's like a guy, got like a pelt on. That's how hairy he is at birth. Vayikru Ushmo Esav. What do they call him? Esav. Now, Vayikru Ushmo Esav, notice, doesn't sound like somebody is officially giving him a name, but that's just what they call him. Why do they call him Esav? So the Sforno says Esav is like Asui. He's well done. He's all cooked, you know. He's red, he's hairy, he's finished. Vayachrechen Yatsa Achiv. Then his brother comes out. Vyado Chezet Bakev Esav. What's the brother doing? He's holding on to Esav's heel. Now, what does that symbolize? It must symbolize something, because why do we need to hear about it? Well, we need to hear about it, first of all, because we're going to find out his name is Yaakov. But clearly they felt that this is a very symbolic statement because they give him the name based on that. Right? So holding on to his brother's leg may mean he's going to use his brother to gain his way somewhere. He's going to exploit that. Or it may be that he's trying to hold his brother back. Maybe his brother's going to get a message, which as long as you let this kid hang around with you, you're never going to get anywhere. Wait, a lot of things. Whatever it is seems to be so significant that Vayikra Shmo Yaakov. Now notice here, it's not Vayikru, but Vayikra, which assumedly is Yitzchak. Which means Esav is kind of, everybody called him Esav. Meantime, he calls him Yaakov. Yitzchak ben Shishim Shana Avalarev Totam. Yitzchak 60 at the time. Okay. And immediately, we jump ahead to their young adulthood or whatever. Vayigdulu ha-ne'arim, vayi Esav ish yodei atzayid ish sadeh, v'yakob ish tam, yoshevu alim. So we're immediately told what they do for a living. What does Esav do for a living? And ish yodei atzayid, and what else? Ish sadeh, which means he's a farmer. right? Which would explain, if he continues to be a ruddy guy, he's always outdoors, doing outdoor stuff. In the meantime, Yaakov is an ish tam. What does ish tam indicate? What does tam mean? What? Kind of simple, naive, transparent.
Not deceptive,
exactly. Right, and we're going to get to that, right? And as opposed to Esav, who is Yodeat Sayid. Because Yodeat Sayid doesn't just mean you have good aim with the arrow. It also means you know how to lie in wait, you know how to maybe do a little bit of a deception so the deer runs that way and you can shoot it, whatever. And every time Yaakov is Ishtam. And what does he do for a living? He's Yoshev Ohalim. What's simple pshat Yoshev Ohalim? He's a shepherd. Right? Yoshev Ohalim. The Radak. Yoshev Ohalim Ikneh. He's a shepherd. Which means, by the way, right away we've set up the most famous dichotomy in the agricultural world, which is farmer versus shepherd, farmer versus rancher. Right? I think, remember Oklahoma? Right. Why is the big song, the farmer and the rancher should be friends? Because they're not friends. They hate each other. Actually, the rancher doesn't mind the farmer. The farmer hates the rancher. Because the farmer plants, and the rancher then has animals that graze and eat up the crops. So they don't get along. And that goes back all the way to Cain and Hevel. Who, by the way, again, the older one is the farmer. And the older one is violent. And that one, the older one, actually kills the younger one. Here, he just wants to kill him. So a lot of parallels going on. Okay. So right away we hear about their different jobs. And then we immediately jump we get this information, which is interesting, but not part of the shir. By how Yitzchak et Esav kitzai b'fiv. Yitzchak favors Esav because Esav feeds him, which is a very weird statement. Rivka ohevet et Yaakov. Maybe at some future time we'll talk about what that means and how that plays into the later story. But now we go to one particular day. Vayazid Yaakov nazid vayavo Esav min hasadeh v'vayef. Yaakov is making lentils, cooking something. Nazid, by the way, comes from the same word as mezid, you know, to do something intentionally, because it means to boil, like you're boiling with passion to do something, right? Vayomer Esav al Yaakov al itin inami nadom adom azek yayef anoche alken karashmo adom. A little parenthetic note is, that's why everybody calls that guy Adom, because that one famous day he walked in and said, give me some red stuff, and he couldn't even say lentils because he was such a bullvan. So they call him Adom. Right? Now, by the way, what have we seen so far in this story of the prophecy? Shnei goyim b'vitnayich we haven't seen yet. They're two guys, they're not two nations. But m'me'ayich yiparedu have we seen? We already hear a description of their birth. What does Esav look like at birth? He's ruddy, he's hairy, and he comes out. What does Yaakov look like? He seems to be smooth. And how does he get out? He gets out holding on to Esav. So they seem right away to be different. And then, if that's not good enough, right away we're told, what do they do for a living? But remember this, lo mi lo mi amatz, which means they're going to struggle with each other. Verav yavod sair. Now watch how that happens right here. Vayomer Yaakov michrach hayom b'chorat chali. What does Yaakov say? You want the soup? Fine. Agree to sell me the b'chorat. Vayomer Esav hinei anochi alech lamut v'alam alzid the b'chorat. What is hinei anochi alech lamut? All the mefarshim all over the place about it. I'm feeling like I'm going to die because of hunger. I'm involved in a life-threatening kind of situation every day, so who says I'm going to live anyways? Whatever the reason may be, there's no point for me having a b'chora, and therefore, I'll be happy to do it. Vayomer Yaakov, hishav ali kayom. So Yaakov is not satisfied with that. He wants him to take an oath. Vayishav alo, v'mkor b'chora tol Yaakov. And he agrees and makes the sale. In the meantime, Yaakov gives him food. V'yaakov natan leisav lechem lezid alashim v'yocha v'yesh v'yakum v'yilach v'yivez esav ata b'chora. That's the end of the scene. What has happened so far? Shnei lumi me'aychi paredu. Lo'om mi lo'om yamatz. Right away there's this challenge. And Rav Yavod Seir has already happened because the older one is now subservient, as it were, to the younger one because he sold him the b'chora. And that's going to come out again later with the bracha in that scene. So this prophecy, which sits at the core of their relationship, we immediately hear a story in which everything except the fact that they're going to be nations already is fulfilled. Now, question about prophecies like this. Is a prophecy like this, and I'll take you to another famous one that we're actually going to see here. Is a prophecy like this fulfilled, meaning it happens once and we're done? Or is a prophecy to be fulfilled means this is a prophecy of the way things are going to be and they're going to continue in that cycle? So I'll give you an example from something we're going to see from perhaps the deepest prophecy we have in Tanakh. By deepest meaning it happens in a very deep vision and it is considered to be a prophecy which really strikes at the heart of all of Jewish history. And that's Brit Ben Matarim. Abraham has a vision. And in the vision, God says to him, in the vision, he goes to sleep, and there's a darkness, and God says to him, Yadoa tidaki geri yezar achab eretz lohem, va'avadum v'inu otam rabam yot shana. We all know the Brit Ben Avatarim. When does Brit Ben Avatarim happen? When does it get fulfilled? So we think it's when they get out of Mitzrayim. Rabbi Soloveitchik famously said that Yaakov was under the impression that he had fulfilled Brit Ben Avatarim, right, and gone through it. But if you look at the Haggadah, we actually don't believe that there's one point of fulfillment. When do we recite Brit Ben Avatarim in the Haggadah? We have a paragraph that we say, Baruch Shomer Avtachato Yisrael Baruch Hu. Shakodesh Baruch Hu Mechashev Et Haketz. Lasod Kima Shamar LaAvram Avinu Brit Ben Avatarim Shenemar Yadoa Teda, etc., etc. And right after we do that, what do we do? V'hi sha'amda la'avoteinu v'lanu. V'hi referring to Brit Ben Avatarim. And what's the next line? Shelo, echad bilvad, amar aleinu l'chaloteinu ela, shebechol dor v'adom dim aleinu l'chaloteinu, which means, in one sense, we believe that Brit Ben Avatarim is a historic pattern. It's not a one-time deal. Maybe Yaakov did fulfill it, and then we filled it in time, and we fulfilled it maybe several times since, and we're not done. Maybe it's a pattern. And maybe, indeed, this Rav Yavod Sa'ir is not just one time it's going to happen that they will be in confrontation and one will be over the other, but this is their relationship is going to be forever. And this sounds like a much more permanent kind of historic pattern than Brit Ben Avatarim. In any case, we see it happen famously. We know the story in passage 6, which is the theft of the brachot, or the taking the brachot, however you want to interpret it. But what does Yitzchak himself declare famously at that scene? Vayomer, in the first pasuk in passage 6, Hakol kol Yaakov ayadayim yedei Esav, indicating the two boys are very, very different from each other. And I don't know who this is. It sounds like Yaakov, feels like Esav. And simple pshat in the pasukim. Now, what bracha does he actually give to the guy who he thinks is Esav, but really is Yaakov? What does he say? He gives him the blessing of material good. Plenty, stuff growing, all of that. And power over the family. That's the bracha he gives to Esav. When he finds out when Esav comes to him, the real Esav comes to him, he finds out what happened. So take a look at Pasuk Lamed Zayin. Vayanzchak vayomer l'Esav. This is his response when Esav says, give me a bracha too. Alright, and so what's the bracha he finally gives him? Etc. Which means that both the bracha intended for Esav and the bracha finally given to Esav, because the first one's given to Yaakov, are about Ya'avdu Chamim, meaning your brothers will be enslaved to you. Which means that Yitzchak also has this Nevuah of sorts, that the brothers are supposed to be in some sort of a perennial conflict, and that one of them is going to enslave the other. I thought Esav would be the one in power over Yaakov. It turns out Yaakov is going to be the one in power over Esav, but that's going to keep switching. So we see this Nevuah playing out already here in Bereishit. Now, by the way, important note, in Bereishit, Esav is not a bad guy. Esav is an impetuous guy. Esav is a bulvan. He's maybe a little uncultured, a little unrefined, but he's not a bad guy. He has a very understandable reaction, which he keeps Bilibo, and even then, with a tremendous amount of consideration, because when he finds out that Yaakov stole the bracha, he did. What's Esav's reaction? As soon as Yitzchak dies, I'll kill him. Doesn't say anything to anybody, and he says, when father dies, I'll kill him. He has that much respect for his father. He doesn't want to hurt his father. Doesn't seem to care about his mother, maybe, I don't know. But about his father. And by the way, in the meantime, he's calmed down after this happens. At some point, he's calmed down. Meantime, Rivka uses this as leverage to get Yaakov to leave town, and that's a whole different story we talked about last week in the context of Rivka's perspective on things. But we see that this nevuah now is being actualized in Bereshit, meaning the nevuah of the two of them as individuals being in face-off against each other and being in this constant seesaw. Chazal make the following comment about the Esav and Yaakov relationship. In Yomar Lecha Adam, Yashva Yerushalayim v'yashva Kesari al tamin lo. If somebody tells you that Yerushalayim and Caesarea are both settled nicely, don't believe them. If somebody tells you that they're both destroyed, don't believe them. Yashva Yerushalayim v'charva Kesari. Oh, Yashva Kesari v'charva Yerushalayim tamin lo. Meaning that only one of them can be successful at a time because Rav Yavod Sayer. Who's the Rav? What's the Yavod? Does it mean will be work for or will enslave? Good. Have fun. But it's always going to be like this. And it's never going to be like this. It's always going to be one on top and one subservient. And that's the relationship that's established here. What is the mystical moment for Yaakov? And everybody has a mystical moment. What's Avram's mystical moment in his life? His Brit Ben Avatarim seems to be. Yitzhak's mystical moment seems to be the Akedah. Seems like, you know. Yaakov's mystical moment, he has two mystical moments. One is the Sulam, and on the other hand, the other side of the Sulam is the wrestling match. These two interactions with Malachim. And both of them involve name changes. At the Sulam, he changes the name of the place to Beit El, and at the other interaction, he gets his name changed, and he names the place Peniel, but he gets his name changed. He's promised his name is going to become Yisrael because now you're standing up and facing off against your enemy. This whole picture of who Yaakov has to become, somebody who can stand up against his enemy and face him off, is what the picture is. Notice, however, how this relationship in the short term, at the last time Yaakov and Esav see each other, seems to be finished peacefully and nicely. Because in the last passage on the page, in passage 8, Yaakov comes back to Esav, and Esav's coming with 400 men, and Yaakov's afraid, and Yaakov prays, and Yaakov sets up two camps, and Yaakov sends a huge gift. And when Yaakov finally comes to Esav, what does Esav do? He embraces him. And what are the 400 men? A nice delegation for my brother. And what does Yaakov say to Esav? Here, take this gift. And what does Esav say? I've got enough. You keep it. He said, no, you keep it. And what does Esav then say? Come with me and let's live together. And Yaakov says, I'll catch up with you. It's beautiful. And you get the feeling that maybe that prophecy was short-lived, meaning it was a short-term prophecy. And it's been fulfilled. We've come full circle. They're not going to confront each other anymore. There's not going to be anybody serving each other anymore, and it's beautiful. That's what you would think. And you have every reason to think that until we get to the Midbar and we meet Edom, and then suddenly the big historic cycles start up again. But this is, you know, and maybe Amalek in the desert, depending how we want to read it.
But where do you have the Rav Yavod Seir?
So at this point, it seems like that's done.
Then where did it happen?
When Yaakov got the bracha that he was going to be the one controlling,
so right? And Vita Machalim. Even though it didn't manifest into anything?
Right. Now, how does it ultimately play out, and where's the Goyim? So that's later on in history. That may be some other time. Maybe we'll do it next week. I don't know. But in the meantime, that's what's happened here. But the question I really want to ask is, why is this the relationship they have to have? Meaning, Hashem says this to Rivka. Each one of those four statements, which builds in severity, is it just because, okay, that's who they're going to be? Or is it that's what has to happen? I'm going to suggest that that's what has to happen. And for that, we need to look back at sources 1, 2, and 3. And a source that's, I guess we'll call it 2B. All right? Or maybe not 2B. Okay. How does our whole story start? Our whole story starts, our story, our national story starts with two very small words. And the two small words are Lech Lecha. That's where our story starts. It's humanity's story until then. And then, Vayomar Adonai El Avram Lech Lecha. And that's where our story starts. What does Hashem promise Avram? Take a look at source one. Vayomar Adonai El Avram Lech Lecha Me'artzecham Me'artzecham Me'etavicha La'aretz Eshareka Ve'escha L'goy Gadol. What does that mean, Escha L'goy Gadol? What does that mean? Which means you're going to have a lot of kids and they'll all become the Abrahamites. And that's going to be a big nation. And that nation's going to be what? Famous and the source of bracha for all of humanity. That's the next two psukim. Beautiful. And that promise is repeated again, Perek Yud Gimel, when Lot separates and Hashem shows Avram the land he's going to give him. And right? And that promise repeats in Perek Tedvav when Avram says, what's the point of giving me anything? After all, Eliezer's going to inherit everything. So, go outside, count the stars. You can't count them. That's how many kids you'll have. Beautiful. It's great. Are there going to be other goyim in the world besides Avram? Of course there are. Matter of fact, in Brit Ben Avatarim, how does Brit Ben Avatarim start? It's in source 2. Ger Yezar Chav Eretz Lohem. Which means there's going to be another nation out there who's going to be against your nation, your kids, going to enslave them, and I'm going to judge them, and your kids will come out with great wealth. So it's not as if it's going to be the father of the whole world. The father of a great nation, but before that nation, its embryonic stages, that nation will become enslaved to somebody else, and I'm going to deal with that other nation. Very nice. Still one nation. Please take a look at the last source. We're going to look at source 3. Avram gets his name changed. What's the name change? Lo yikare od et shimcha Avram. Vaya shimcha Avraham. Why am I changing your name to Avraham? It's a cute little change. Just add a hay in there. Ki av hamon goyim netaticha. What does that mean, av hamon goyim? You'll be the father of many nations. Whoa, time out. I thought I was going to be the goy gadol. Now I'm Av Hamon Goyim. Now, is this good news for Avram or bad news for Avram? It sounds like good news. Supposed to be good news. I'm not so sure it's good news. Because if you are a Goy Gadol, that means all of your descendants are united. It's one nation. They're involved in one mission. Now that you're Av Hamon Goyim, what does that mean? At the very least, it means that not all your kids are going to be together. You're going to have a group of kids who are going to go and be this group and be that group. Maybe they won't have anything to do with each other. Maybe they won't mess with each other. Maybe they'll even have treaties, but they're going to be separate. Which, by the way, means that, well, if these guys are completing the Avraham mission, these guys aren't. All right. But that could still work. But here's where it gets real tricky. Then he turns around and says, "Vayomer Elohim el Avraham, Sarai ishtecha lo tikra et shma Sarai ki Sarashma. Don't call her Sarai, call her Sarah. Okay, you got a hay, she gets a hay. Very nice. Uverachti ota. And by the way, you know the chat. You take the yud from the Sarai and split it into two hays. Make change for 10. Uverachti ota vegam natati mimena lecha ben. Miracle. Because Avraham's 89 at the time. She's 89 at the time. You're going to have a son with her. A son, a single son. That's more than enough at 90. Single son. Uverachtiha v'hayta legoyim. What does that mean? I'm going to bless her and v'hayta legoyim. She will become nations, which means, what does that mean? That means she will be the mother of nations in plural. Now, why nations? Because she's only going to have one son. What does that tell you? That one son has to be the father of nations. Which means now, Rivka's nevuah is already cast here. Because if Yitzchak is the one son of Sarah, and Sarah is supposed to be the mother of nations, that means Yitzchak has to be the father of nations. And if Yitzchak and Rivka only have one pregnancy, that means that pregnancy's got to produce nations. Okay, so fine, so we have nations. But why are these nations in conflict? And the answer may lie in something I left out, 2b. What happens between Brit Ben Avatarim, Perek Tedvav, and Avram's name change, which is what we're looking at in Perek Yud Zayin. What happens in the middle? It's just Perek Tet Zayin. What's between 15 and 17? 16. Perek Tet Zayin is a very short perek, and it's a perek that's often ignored in Lech Lecha, because Lech Lecha is filled with such huge things. The Perek Tet Zayin, which is huge by itself, is often overlooked. Perek Tet Zayin is a short perek about the pregnancy of Hagar and Hagar's interaction at the well with the Malach, and then the birth of Ishmael. But what happens in that perek? Something kind of scary. Sarai, knowing that at this point she hasn't had any kids and she's already older, she's 75, she hands over Hagar to Avram. Hagar's been treated here. Chattel is too nice for this. Hagar is Shifchat Sarai, now she's Eshet Avram. Then she's Shifchat Sarai again. Then she's a girl running in the desert. She hands Hagar over. And Hagar can't say anything about it. Avram is loyal to Sarai, so Avram takes Hagar, impregnates Hagar. Hagar maybe struts her stuff, maybe Sarai thinks she's struts. We don't know, but we know that Sarai senses an in-your-face attitude by Hagar or something like that. Sarai gets angry. So Avram says, Hine shivchatech biyadech. Listen to those words. You gave me this girl. She's now pregnant. She's carrying my child. So let's think about her. Let's think about that child. Hine shivchatech biyadech. Take your shivcha back. Asila hatov benayach. Do whatever you want to her. What's the next part of the pasuk? Vata'aneha Sarai. Sarai afflicts her, oppresses her, and she runs away. And a Ramban that I couldn't make up. I'd be scared to say something like this. And I wouldn't say, I'd be scared to say something like this if I didn't have the Ramban in back of me. The Ramban's in front of me. The Ramban says something that is mind-shattering, because we've all been trained to think differently. Ramban says, Chata imenu b'zeh chet gadol. And unlike what he says about Avram and leaving Israel, he doesn't say b'shogeg here. He says Sarah's behavior was wrong. V'gam Avraham b'hanichola. And Avraham also allowing her to behave like that was wrong. And he said, what was the comeuppance? Is that Hashem blessed Hagar with a child whose descendants would afflict the descendants of Avram and Sarah with all sorts of oppression. The Ramban, by the way, at the end of his life, as you know, made Aliyah. So he came to Israel, and he passed from Crusader Israel to Mamluk Israel, and he saw how the Jewish community was treated on both sides of that divide. That, I believe, is what switched things to the point of Goy Gadol, Lahamon Goyim, Mimena Goyim, that Sarah herself would be the mother of Goyim. But the nature of what that means is not just to be different, but to be in confrontation. And that nivuah then automatically comes now to Yitzchak or to Rivka, Shnei goyim bevinech, because these are the amim that Sarah is going to have. Ushnei lumim v'yayech yiparedu. Their differences will be from birth, and you see it. Ulo'om milo'om yimatz. They're not just going to go their separate ways. They're going to be in conflict. This is something that was started back in Avram's house, in Avram's tent, really. Rav Yavod Sa'ir. Because, by the way, what happened in the story of Yishmael? Rav Yavod Sa'ir. Who was the superior one in that relationship? Yishmael had to leave, and Yitzchak was the one who inherited. And so, this piece, which ends up guiding so much of Jewish history, and Jewish self-awareness in history, and self-identity in history, is something that doesn't start with Rivka. It seems that it starts a little bit earlier in the house of Avraham and Sarai. And we think about it, what something that may seem small, but it's not small, which is the way that the slave girls treated in the house has repercussions and implications for all of Jewish history. Something just to think about as we read Parshat Toldot this week and move on from there.